All right, good evening. Let's get started. Something I forgot to mention last week is that one of our things we want to do more of is we got a lot of talented young men here in the congregation, and we want to encourage them and use them more. And so David's doing this this quarter. I'm doing this this quarter as well, using some of our young men to also teach some during our quarter. And Timothy Shelton, a lot of you all know Timothy. Timothy was the one who made the mistake of answering my text, yes. So anyway, so Timothy's actually going to also do some of the sessions we get later in the quarter. Timothy's going to do tonight and pick up a couple others for us. So I'm really excited about that and thankful for him. Talented young man. And if you haven't met Timothy yet, this is Timothy. So I'm going to lead you in a word of prayer, and then Timothy's our teacher for tonight. Father in heaven, thanks so much for giving us the gift of life, bringing us to this place, and letting us be your people. Of all that we could have deserved or hoped for, given what we've done and the catastrophe that we've made of your world. Father, we're thankful for Jesus who came to this world to repair the damage, to sacrifice himself for our forgiveness, and to offer us hope and direction for how to live rightly before you. Pray that as we continue to read through this great gospel of Matthew, a record of his words and deeds, Father, that we'll be even more amazed by who he is, what he's done, and learn even more from the words that he still teaches us by today. This is our prayer in Jesus' name. Lord. Amen. Amen.
Alright, so Matthew 13, that's what I was told we're studying. I hope that's right. If not, we are anyways. Matthew 13. You know, this chapter in general is kind of a pretty cool chapter because it just continuously goes on with different parables. And as we go through this chapter, we're going to just kind of decipher all these parables and really try to draw a meaning to why all of these are in this specific chapter. We're going to spend some time in each parable, but I really, as we go through it, want you to kind of look to see what meaning is being conveyed throughout all of them. So, starting in chapter 13, we're going to start out with the parable of the sower, and I'm going to ask if someone would like to read the first 9 verses.
Read it. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea, and great crowds gathered about him, so that he got into a boat and sat down. And the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell along among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and produced again, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears, let him hear.
Awesome. Thank you. I think this specific parable I've heard as a child over and over and over and over again. And I think this is probably the first time in my life I've actually sat down to really read it and try to understand it. Let's see what we can do here. We've got, 4 different events happening here. You guys want to call out what those are? Where does the seed end up going? What are those 4 places the seed's going?
Wayside.
Does someone have a different translation of that?
Beside the road.
Along the path.
Rocky places.
Thank Well, you got hard ground?
No, I'm just, that was, I can hear, so. That was my interpretation. Okay. The hard ground where nothing would go in. So.
Gumbo.
Stony place.
Just so you guys know, I can hear really well. So if you whisper, I can hear.
Stony place.
I think the stony ground, that's what the ESV says, is the rocky ground, I think is the same thing you guys are talking about. What's another place that ends up landing?
Good ground.
And then the good soil, yeah, good ground. There's one more. Do you guys see that one other place that it ends up?
Actually, your first one is two different ones.
Oh, my first one's two different ones.
Yeah, the wayside is the pathway, and then there's rocky ground.
What is the wayside? What does that mean to you guys?
Where people walk and found it.
Pathway.
Pathway. I think the crazy part about this specific story, I don't know why I've got this different portion. This is going to bother me the whole time how this happened. But what's crazy about this story is this is very basic, right? It's a bunch of seeds, and they're just being thrown in different places. And Jesus makes an application to the story. And what's really interesting to me is as you start this out, so the wayside, the path, right? What ends up happening to the seed here?
Birds.
The birds come and get it. And then when it gets to the rocky ground, what ends up happening there?
No roots.
No roots. And then we get the thorns. You know, if you pull over to the verse 18 and 23, you'll see kind of the explanation of the story. But before we actually go over there, what is kind of the idea he's trying to convey here? What is like the overall theme that he's conveying?
That the gospel was available to everyone, but not everyone is going to accept the gospel.
That's right. That's right. Any other ideas on that? What else is he saying there?
Once it's out of your hands, it's out of your hands. So like if you're sowing the gospel, you're sharing the word. Once you plant that seed, it's kind of up to that person to take it over.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
The half said before that, you have to sow. You gotta do the work.
Right.
Decide.
Right.
And lots of things can throw one off the path and that's in many different directions, but only one direction where the good soil is available for it, and the one that will stick.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Something else that I get out of it is that the soil just sowed. He didn't analyze the soil. He didn't do any of those things. He just sowed. And sometimes we analyze too much. The soil that we're gonna sow the seed into. So we ought to just do the job, as someone just said.
Right.
The soul also knew that some would sprout, and that was his confidence that he would throw the seeds out, and somebody would receive it well and do something with it and grow. Others would have the results of the different soils or the different way people accept it and then how they receive it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, you know, what I was going through this personally and I was reading through it, it's very ironic to me because personally I actually go through this a lot myself because I'll talk to people about God. But then I get to the end of it and I'm like, okay, well, how do I close the deal? That's what I do at work, right? I mean, I go in and I close the deal every time. It's always closed. And, you know, it's kind of the thing with this. It's not really about closing the deal, right?
it's about just throwing the seed out. And I guess someone mentioned it a second ago, but it's not about you and how you present it, but it's about them. It's about what type of ground or what type of soil they are, right? And what's really interesting is you know, after I read this, I was like, man, why does he speak like this? You know, he always speaks in these stories, and I mean, I don't know if you guys have like parents or something that speaks this way, but if my dad spoke to me in stories, I'd be like, what are you saying? I'm not going to sit here and try to decipher your story. What are you trying to tell me? He tries to talk about fishing, and I don't really know anything about that, so it doesn't go very well. And, you know, his disciples in verse 10, they're like, they came to him, they're like, why do you speak to us in parables? Why do you speak to us like that? And then he goes on to give an answer. But before we go there, I want to hear kind of what you guys think. Why do you think he tells stories? I guess some of you, especially that have wisdom, do you use stories as a way to express an answer?
I ask questions rather than giving them the answer because I want them to think.
Yeah.
If you just give someone the answer, especially when you're dealing with a younger person, they're not going to receive it very well, or they're not. They're going to mishandle it. So you got to give them something to get them captivated about what you're saying and how much thought is really goes into it, even though that person may not be thinking in those terms. But it's bigger than what, and it's more serious than what they're thinking. So you got to give them some background, and later on the dots will connect where a little someone else teach them a little there. But you got to teach them something and explain something, give them a little story. That's what Jesus did. Every time he taught them parables of the things that were familiar to them in their time. And the soil was very familiar to them with the plantings and the harvesting and reaping and all those things. So that's why that analogy is used.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I think that right there is probably one of the more valid points, especially today, as, you know, you sort of try to convey something. If you can get them to think of it themselves, a lot of times that's a better way of conveying a certain type of message.
You know, Timothy, I think the answer to why he speaks in parables is given in this parable of the sower. It's people that have a heart to know and listen and understand what Jesus is talking about are the ones who are going to receive and understand these parables and know how to apply them. The rocky soil, the thorny soil aren't going to get it because their hearts aren't in a position to understand what he's talking about.
That's pretty cool. I actually didn't get that when I read through those. That's a pretty cool application.
Well, their spiritual depth, their spiritual knowledge does not relate to, I mean, their earthly knowledge far exceeds their somebody that doesn't know the gospel. So they have the earthly knowledge or material knowledge, but they don't have the spiritual knowledge. So you give them what they can relate to, what they understand.
Yeah, no, that's true. And that works with a lot of things, right? A lot of things, we talk like that. Just try to relate that way. You can understand one perspective, maybe you can understand the other perspective.
And oftentimes it's more memorable. And it is easier to recall. I mean, just thinking about simple things. If I said, don't be a follower, but if I said, if Timmy jumped off the cliff, are you going to jump off the cliff? That's going to probably stick with the child more than don't be a follower. They're going to remember not to jump off the cliff with Timmy. So I think there's just this sense of relatable to, or memorable, sorry.
Right. That's true. That's very true. All right, let's jump in. Let's see what he says about it specifically. I'm going to go ahead and read verse 11, and I'm going to read to, 14. And he answered to them, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away.
This is why I speak to them in parables. Because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. Indeed, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled. Now, just so you guys know, I'm reading out of the ESV. I don't know what the version you guys read out of here. Is it King James? Is that what you guys read out of?
ESV.
ESV.
Yes,
yeah,
King
James. Okay. Yeah, I'm always curious about that because King James really really throw a loop. But you say something to King James, I don't know what you're saying. I have to look it up. Like, okay, got it. I actually had a King James Bible when I was studying this, and I was like, I have no idea what you're trying to say. I just ended up closing it, putting it back on the shelf, where it belongs. But anyways, yeah. And going back to verse 11, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. I mean, when he goes about saying this specific thing in verse 11, why do you think he's saying that? Why do you think he says this specific thing? Is he, I mean, it kind of sounds like predestination, right? What do you think? Some people get it, some people don't. Is that the idea?
His disciples have been following him, so they're used to listening to him, but others may not be.
Okay.
These are interested, and the others are just newly come to face it and may reject it.
Okay, yeah.
Well, sometimes it's timing, too. Sometimes people aren't ready, and you can go back or have people come back and say, what did you say about
me? Yeah.
So something does stick, but maybe not the whole picture.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So there's a time concept in this parable. You're talking about closing the deal. This there's growth that takes place there in this parable. In fact, when he gets to the good soil, there's three types of increases. Not everything is increased the same. So there's some people who are going to get the gospel. They may not grow as fast. It may be at a different place as someone else is. They may be able, like the disciples, they were around Jesus all the time, so they had a little, maybe had an easier time understanding what was happening. But we got to keep in mind with this parable is that time concept, and not everybody is going to get it at the same time, if you will, or in the same measure, if you will. I mean,
yeah, no, that's a good comment. I actually didn't think about that. That's exactly right. Go ahead.
Well, piggybacking on that, even the disciples did not understand all things. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because they were asking Jesus, what did this mean?
Right.
And so, but there were things that they had been privy to, that they knew, things that they were able to understand that other people were not at that time.
Right.
Then there was more that they could understand once they received the Holy Spirit after, you know, Jesus left, and they were able to teach, and then people got more and more and grew. And so it wasn't time. But these people's hearts were not receptive either.
That's true, yeah. No.
Toward the end, what I was going to add into it about the heart, in verse 15, is the heart was growing dull of hearing, and that's why he was made that statement at the beginning. Do we think that he was talking about predestination, I think that was the word.
Yeah.
But no, he was talking about the hearts, dealing with the hearts of the people and how they were receiving things and not receiving things. Some just, you know, their hearts weren't right. And others, their heart was right to receive those things.
Yeah. No, I mean, all of you spot on. I mean, I think that's exactly what he's talking about. I mean, he's talking about spiritual readiness. I mean, you're just not mature spiritually to get it yet. Timing. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's just being ready, not only, you know, being ready spiritually sometimes, it's also just being ready to submit to a higher being. Right? Because I think that's
that's one of the, you know, the issues that come up, especially in us men, right? I mean, it's the idea of, okay, I've got all this education. Okay, I've got all this, you know, understanding. I'm confident in who I am. I'm, you know, and a lot of pride comes in there. And historically, that's always been the case. Like, I'm king. No one's above me. And that's how it is. And I think that's a lot of times the issue. Go ahead.
I was going to say that God gives knowledge to people that truly seek Him as well.
Right, right, right. That's true.
It's just like the Ethiopian eunuch. He wanted it. His heart was right.
Right.
And that's what is being shown here, is that if your heart is right, then you're going to open your eyes and seek in those things that Christ is trying to show us through this. And so if our heart is right, we're going to have a better understanding. God's going to give you those things, and you're going to be at the point to where you want the knowledge and you understand about what you need in this particular setting. In all settings, talking about conversion. So if you're not converted, then you're not going to be saved.
Yeah.
It's just like Peter, when you are converted and strengthen your brother. So even at the point we think that someone is what he should be and they're not, that's because they haven't been converted, truly converted. It's a heart issue, always a heart issue.
No, that's exactly right. And I think even at the, you know, extent that, I mean, these people had it, right? You have all the evidence possible, right? All the evidence possible, and you still wouldn't believe, right? You still wouldn't do it. And we have a lot of evidence today, but they had even more because, you know, there's one thing that we don't necessarily have is we don't get to witness a miracle right in front of us. That's something we don't get to do. But they got to do that, and they still didn't get it.
You know, I'm looking back, he asked, why are you speaking in parables in response to the parable he just told? And I'm thinking about the people listening, and I wonder how many of them are going, am I a Thor? Like, they're hearing it from a different, from the parable, and being able to relate back to think, am I that way? Am I hearing it this way to where it's falling off?
Yeah.
You know, where do I fall here? He's talking to us. Who am I? Where am I? And it may prick. And then some may just be okay with me in that way. But it's, again, another way to relate to them, for them to think.
Yeah, for sure. Good.
I think if you take this out of the context that it's here and you put it related to what we do today, this is, we understand it if you put it in the secular version. Okay, you get in a business or in athletics, you get four people and you put them with somebody who's really good and said, this person's going to teach you something. Chances are only one of the four will be successful. Because one of the persons will go, well, I don't really want to do this. I'm not really excited about this particular area. Or somebody might go, I'd rather go party than spend my time here listening to this person. Somebody's going to say, hey, well, this is kind of interesting. It's kind of cool, but whatever. And then you're going to have somebody that's going to go, I really want to learn this because I want to be really good at this. And they dedicate themselves, they work at it, and they make it. We see this every day. It's really nothing new what Jesus is talking about. He's just talking about it in the spiritual sense. And yet we see it every day in a physical sense all around us. So it shouldn't be any real surprise.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, it's kind of funny. Last week, Drayton and I actually sat down, we counted that the amount of classmates that have taken our exact like career path and, you know, have went to this or went to this, and, you know, many of them have just kind of went somewhere else, just went into another industry entirely. So super, super interesting, because that's exactly how it ends up playing for a lot of things in the secular part of life. So yeah, that's a good comment. Verse 12. Go ahead.
It kind of reminds me of the wheat and the tares. It just comes to mind how the wheat has substance and it's going to fall to the bottom. You know, you get it. The wheat has it. And then the tares is just fly away willy-nilly, and it's going to float to the top, and it's going to be, it's good for nothing but burning.
Right.
So it's like a sifting, the wheat and the tares. There are those like the wheat, where it has substance because it took in the nourishment, the nutrients, right?
Right.
Like the word. You got to be nourished by the word, and the seed was thrown, and so when it doesn't take root, is the maturity is not there, it doesn't take root, and it's like you said, people don't care about it as much. It's like they don't take it seriously, don't care about it like that.
Right.
And those that take it seriously and dedicate their lives to living it.
Right. I think in one of the next parables, we're actually going to see that exact concept, right? So yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Verse 12, for to the one who has more will be given. Yeah, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. This one right here kind of, I mean, this specific verse, when I read it first, I was like, wow, okay, that's interesting. Is he just talking about a spiritual sense here? Or is he talking about a physical sense too? If you don't take the word, does that mean like your life is over physically? Does it mean it's over? I mean, truly it means it's over spiritually, right?
It'd be the consequence of how what you do with it.
Sure.
I mean, if you're striving after something that you really, really want,
yeah,
you're going to be noticed, and you're going to grow in it. You'll know more, and people that, in a psycho sense, will see what you're able to do, and you're going to grow more. Perhaps some responsibility and whatever it is. And if somebody doesn't have that desire, it'll be noticed as well. They're going to kick out. I mean, they don't have anything to offer. They're not taking it, they're not growing.
Yeah.
They're not going to be given any more opportunities.
He explains it in the 25th chapter, in the talents, about the parable of talents. So.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. You're saying, like, you talent, it, like you use it and it grows and it'll continue. That's a good point. What do you got?
So you asked the question, is your life going to be over because you don't accept it?
Right.
So your life is not going to be over. You're not going to be struck down and die and sent to hell.
Right.
And not given life to live. So God reigns on the just as well as the unjust. You go to school and you educate yourself to be a doctor. You're going to reap what you sow. You're going to become a doctor because you gave due diligence to learning and striving to do that. So those things will be that is your blessing and the benefits that come with that. Even if you don't accept the Lord, you'll still have your life. It won't be taken away from you. But it's spiritually, that will be taken away. Spiritually, you know, everything will be over in the end if you don't spiritually accept. But physically, this is your blessings down here. Physically.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's good. I like the way you put that. You know, when I read this last week, I flew to Vegas for a conference, and I was sitting at a dinner, and I was sitting next to this gentleman, and he was middle-aged, like 60 or something. I could say on this whole picture.
Middle age has moved up to 60 now.
I really tried. I was sitting next to him and I was talking to him, and he was telling me about, you know, all the stuff that he's done and that kind of thing, which is really cool. And he started telling me a little bit more about his personal life. It was like, yeah, I'm divorced now. Yeah, my kids have kind of, you know, they kind of avoid me now. And I'm just kind of moving out of the industry because, you know, all you new people are kind of coming in and outworking me. And so I can't really play as much anymore. But, you know, I kind of made my money and all that kind of thing. So I'm here. And this verse really kind of hit me because, yeah, he had no spirit, just the way he talked, he had no spiritual understanding, but even his physical life has started to diminish because he didn't take a lot of the principles that come from the spiritual application, right? There's a lot of spiritual things that we do that affect our physical life, whether you realize it or not, and those affect your relationships and they affect how everything plays out in the end. Yeah, that was something that made me think about. You guys have any idea, or I guess those of you, have you guys experienced anything like that before? Where people, as they get older, It's like they just lose everything physically. And it's not necessarily because they made, you know, bad choices, you know, maybe they were a doctor or something, but they just didn't take notice of the principles the Bible has as far as relationships and just spiritual principles.
Well, you see people all the time that seem to have made it financially, but
yeah,
they don't have, they're still missing something, and they're what they're missing is what God meant us for to have,
right.
And no amount of money, nothing can buy that. What God meant for us to have a relationship with Him, and it affects our relationship with our kids, our everybody. I mean, I remember, I mean, all of us, like, no matter where we are in the United States, if we have a breakdown, like our car breaks down and we need help, there is somebody there to help us.
Right.
That is very, I mean, yeah, everybody can call, you know,
Triple A.
But I'm not talking about that. When you're in dire need and you need something, nobody here has to worry about it. There's
right.
somebody they can call and help them, and the world doesn't have that.
That's very true. That's very true. Go ahead.
Well, as a middle-aged man. that's, you know, that's why there's so much wisdom in Ecclesiastes.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, you talk about all the pursuits of life bring maybe some temporary satisfaction and fulfillment, but nothing sustains, nothing lasts. There's still emptiness after that feeling subsides. That's why middle-aged folks did it.
There's knowledge and applied knowledge, too.
Absolutely.
James brings us, the book of James brings us out.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the Psalms, Ecclesiastes. I mean, Proverbs is by far my favorite book because it literally goes into all of that. And
well, James is Proverbs is a New Testament.
Right, yeah, but yeah, James, yeah, honestly, expresses a lot of the same concepts, though, as far as some of that wisdom, how it's applied. Oh,
the world gets part of it. There is a real movement for everybody to be grateful. Be grateful, yeah.
That's true. Thankfulness is
it's a big thing right now. But very few people, you know, understand that it's a totally ongoing thing for Christians to give to one another, to serve one another, to be there for one another. And what joy you get out of that.
Right.
And it keeps you going. I've had people ask me, you know, or what is keeping you, particularly during COVID, you know, how are you functioning? How are you going on? You know, aren't you worried about everybody? Frankly, no. I mean, we die, you know.
Right.
We have something after that. And the world just doesn't get the whole picture of the joy and living and why you're living and what your goal is. It's just not there.
That's so true. In fact, I actually heard someone the other day that's in the Islam community, and they're like, you know, the best thing about Christians is that they give, and they give a lot. They're like, you go to a mosque or something, they don't really give. Kind of interesting, just kind of a difference. I've never heard that before, and that really just struck me, just how generous and how much it really means to us. And you're right. I mean, it really sets a goal, and it really sets a kind of a lifestyle set into giving, which just brings a lot of joy to us. Real quickly, let's go to Isaiah 6. Because he gets to the end of this in verse 14, indeed in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled. And I'm really, real quick, going to run over there, because I really liked how Isaiah put this, and I had to just read through the entire chapter to really get the whole point, but I will spare you a good portion of that, I think. Isaiah 6. In verse, let's start 9. Yeah. And so Isaiah, he just had his vision in the start of the chapter, right? And God is like, you know, my people are, they're not doing right. They're under King Uzziah, or excuse me, King Uzziah just died, and that's just kind of where they are. And so he's having Isaiah go up there and speak to them. And so just starting in verse 9, and he said, go and say this to the people. Keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on saying, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull, and their ears heavy, and their blind, and blind their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed. Then I said, how long, O Lord? And he said, until cities lie waste without inhabitants, and houses without people, and the land is desolate and waste, and the Lord removes people far away, and the forsaken place are many in the midst of the land. And though a tenth remain in it, it will be burned again, like a timber of oak, whose stump remains when it is felled, and the holy seed is its stump. When I read through this at first, I was like, what in the world is he talking about? And as I continued to just kind of meditate on it, I really started to look at it, and it's just God's righteousness, right? You really pay attention to it, it's God's righteousness. He understands these people aren't going to leave. They're not going to listen. They're not going to see. But he sends him anyways because he has to try. And personally, this gives me a lot of confidence in God, right? He's going to try. Even if he knows you're not going to listen, he's still going to try. Very powerful words there.
That's what we got to read in, or not, we don't have to, but that's what our reading in Amos is talking about. The Lord, seeking the Lord and living, and it was, you know, seek the Lord and live, lest he break out like fire. And it talks about all this bad stuff that he's going to do. And the verses that we weren't given to read, 14 and 15 after that, seek good and not evil, that you may live. And so the Lord, the God of hosts, will be with you, as you have said. Hate evil and love good, and establish justice in the gate. It may be that the Lord, the God of hosts, will be gracious to the remnant of Joseph. So that's a theme that runs all through the Bible.
Right.
God just wants the relationship with us.
That's right.
And he wants us to listen, and he wants us to have a heart that will receive. And he is constantly trying to remind us, please do what I ask you to do. Please do what I ask you to do. Please come back. Please come back. Please come back. Please do what's right, so that you can have a relationship with me. It's...
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. That's exactly what it comes down to. I have mismanaged time very poorly.
It's easy to do.
Very poorly. So, we're going to, I wanted to make a point on this, though. We talked about parables, right? We talked about literally just this parable, and I've run out of time somehow. Did not expect that at all. But again, why does he speak in parables? I think there are three reasons why he's speaking in parables. We've already uncovered them, but I want to put them on the board here.
Their background, they were agrarian. They were...
What they relate to.
What they can relate to.
Yeah.
Helping them understand, right? Helping them understand.
He kind of goes against that with this quote from Isaiah. He says, right, I'm telling them in parables because they're not going to listen anyway.
Right. Right. What's another reason why he uses parables opposed to just being direct? Go ahead.
He also used the word heal. To heal them.
like as if, you know, they're, because they're not seeing, there's something wrong with them. So I think for using parables, because he mentions them there, to heal them.
To heal them, okay.
Wow.
Goodness. Okay. And then, yeah, just going from Isaiah itself, I think the other reason he does it is literally just to give another chance. Just to open up another opportunity to communicate to you. Because all these parables all have a very similar meaning, but he's putting it a different way, so hopefully he can get to you. So that's all I got, guys, apparently.